Good morning, this beautiful Saturday morning. I'm Pam McElvain, your host of The Inclusive Voice from Promenade Media here with you. Our On the Pulse news this morning, as we, move into the next generation, there's steps that's been taken into this new workforce. One thing is becoming clear. They're not just looking for jobs, this next generation or new generation that is. They're looking for values that align with their own. A recent Global Newswire report surveying over 2,000 students and graduates reveals a significant shift in what young professionals expect from employers. In today's climate, inclusion isn't a bonus, it's a baseline. In today's climate, inclusion isn't a bonus, it's a baseline. In fact, 84% of respondents say that seeing visible LGBTQ plus role models and senior leadership would directly influence their decision to accept a job. That's a powerful signal that representation and identity is at the top of what matters to our younger generation more than ever. At the same time, nearly one in three young professionals report reconsidering their career path or even location due to growing pushback against diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. This highlights a workforce that is paying close attention, not just to what companies say, but to what they stand for and actually what actions are being taken. Flexibility is also a non-negotiable. Nearly half of graduates now prefer hybrid work viewing, as it is a standard expectation rather than a perk. The message is simple. The future of workforce is discerning, value-driven, and unafraid to walk away. For employers, the question is no longer whether to evolve, but how quickly they can. So AI is just not becoming our new normal, but all the idiosyncrasies and nuances of what makes a better, balanced workforce. With that, we're gonna be right back with you with our guests. We're so, so elated to have with us Beth Lane, director, producer, writer, an award-winning, powerful documentary of Unbroken. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after this. We'll be right back with you.
Welcome to P&L Group Holding Company, where purpose meets leadership. For more than two decades, we've been at the forefront of advancing inclusive leadership, cultural transformation, and workforce equity across industries. At our core, we believe that inclusion is more than a goal, it's a business imperative. That's why our mission is simple. We help companies align their people, culture, and strategy to drive measurable results and long-term impact. Our work is rooted in research, benchmarking, and a deep understanding of the dynamics shaping today's workforce. We offer executive coaching, talent development, data-driven strategy, and thought leadership platforms that support C-suite leaders, emerging professionals, and organizations ready to lead with intention. Through our flagship brands like Publishing and Multimedia, Diversity Business Review, the Inclusive Leadership Index, and DLS Learning Solutions, we've cultivated a global community that celebrates leadership, champions equity, and ignites real change. Whether you're transforming your organization from within, building your leadership muscle, or looking to measure what matters, we're your partner. P&L Group isn't just a consultancy. We're your ecosystem for inclusive excellence. Join us. Lead forward. Let's redefine what leadership looks like together.
Welcome back and good morning, everyone, to The Inclusive Voice. I'm Pam McElvain, your host. And as I mentioned before I went to commercial break, we have joining with us Beth Lane, award-winning director, producer, and writer, whose feature debut of Unbroken is what we're going to talk about. It has garnered international recognition, and I'm so, so elated to have her here with us this morning. Good morning, Beth, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Pam. Thank you so much for having me on the program this morning. It's a thrill to be here.
WCPT 820 AM, we'd love to have you. So where are you calling in from today, this morning?
I'm actually here in Chicago today visiting my family, which is really wonderful. Yes, my hometown, Chicago.
Oh my goodness, our audience is going to love you. This is official title of Chicago Progressive Talk. So yay. So where do you live?
I live in California. I split my time between Santa Monica, which is right by the beach, and the mountains. My husband and I moved out to a valley called Ojai, and we just love it. It's very, you know, it's hiking and nature and very spiritual, and it's a good augment to the beach life in Santa Monica.
Okay, Beth, I'm getting ready to bring it to you. I'm a native California girl. Okay, Northern California. I know you're talking about Southern California, which we love, but us Northern Californians, you know, we kind of own the mountains a little better than Northern California. But anyway, so Beth, one of the things, so this is going to be a great answer because you're now between the two coasts here, Midwest and West Coast. So I know you know about keeping yourself well. I think it's important for folks to know how you keep yourself mentally and physically well, you know, in this environment of uncertain time.
Oh my goodness, there's so much. I mean, especially with our documentary feature film, Unbroken, which I'm thrilled to share with all of you that we are streaming on Netflix. Being on the road with the film has really forced me to focus on health and well-being and what are all the things that we can do to make ourselves feel resilient and courageous and brave and empathic to other people. You know, it's easy for me to be in airports and there are all kinds of people from all walks of life. And you see some of the strangest behavior when you're in some of these public situations. And I think I've been in over 50 cities over the last 2.5 years. And so you really learn to hydrate. You make sure you're wearing very comfortable clothing. And for me, I'm a journal writer and meditator. So I spend each morning with a little bit of time, whether it's journaling or meditating, certainly doing a couple of stretches and making sure that I'm eating healthy. I mean, it's very easy also to be on the road and just go for junk food. And that just doesn't help anybody. That's the least of which my waistline.
And nobody can be more busier than you are. That's incredible. I remember when I traveled so much, I'm getting ready to date myself. I had to look at the yellow page, the name of the, on the phone where we have the zip code, the area code.
Right.
Okay. What state am I in? But you know, one of the things that you said that no one has said, believe it or not, out of my 500 shows I've done, no one has said hydrate as a way of well-being. And that's a real thing. That's really important that we need to do. So thank you for sharing that. And welcome back home. So go ahead.
I just said thank you. Thank you.
Oh yeah, you're welcome. So one of the things I like to do on our show is with our guests, because, you know, all of you are just so, you know, so many of you are exceptional people, and we podcast after the show. So is to hear about your career journey. I think particularly for our young audience and up and coming generations that listen to our show, I like them to hear a little bit of the background before we get into the meat of what's happening. So we know you grew up here in Chicago, but tell us about, you know, what you studied, where you studied, what inspired you to actually get into it.
Absolutely. And I'll mention a lot of Chicago haunts because having grown up here, why not? My very first, I think, kind of performative experience that I'm told about was when I was 3 years old. My grandparents were hosting a party with a swing band at the Standard Club. And I'm so sorry to say that the Standard Club downtown, which is a city club, is no longer. The building is there on I'm forgetting the proper name. I should know the name of the street that it was on. Was it Knickerbocker Place? Anyway, shame on me. But the Standard Club was our family's kind of fixture. And they were hosting a party and nobody was dancing to the swing band. And they went over to this corner to see, why are people gathered around in this corner? Well, there was this three-year-old apparently reciting songs and poetry and dancing and entertaining people. Well, that was me. And then I think my next memory of being a performer was my mom had signed me up to model some clothes for a charity. Perhaps it was for Michael Reese Hospital or something like that. And that, again, very, very young age, maybe 4 or 5 years old. But we moved out to Wilmette, Illinois, which is where I was raised. And my mom had a dance studio.
Well, Chi-Chi. I'm just going to say Chi-Chi. That's it. Go ahead.
Yeah, my mom, Ginger, she had a dance studio with another woman, Teresa Cullen, and they had both studied for decades with a marvelous dancer named Edna McCrae. So I started dance classes there. I was involved with Wilmette Children's Theater. But really, my very first more formal education in the theater was with Joyce and Vern Piven at the Piven Theater Workshop in Evanston. And that was a really eye-opening experience. I loved working with the Pivens. I was invited to join the Young People's Company. We were the inaugural, very first ever Young People's Company with the Piven Theater Workshop. And we had a pretty cool gang. I mean, in addition to, of course, Shira Piven, their daughter, but Ann Cusack, Joan Cusack, I remember there were other really fabulous people in our company, and we had such a good time.
Variation.
And then I also trained at Interlochen at the National Music Camp that's in Interlochen, Michigan. I trained there as a dancer. I trained downtown as a dancer with Ruth Page and And then Lou Conti, which before it was really the Hubbard Street Dance Company, Lou Conti was actually teaching at the Ruth Page Dance Center before he had his own studio. So those were all very, very formative years. But I'll backtrack a teeny bit for people from Wilmette, because my very first tap teacher was an incredible woman named Joan Wellpott. And her daughter, Vicki Wellpott, is continuing her mother's legacy, a fabulous, fierce tap dancer in her own right. Vicki is still teaching, and she's also teaching a lot of tap for disabled and senior citizens. So the dance background has always
carried. I love that.
Yeah. And Vicki has a great book out there. But the dance background carried me through all through high school, and I started singing quite a bit in high school. My teacher was the fabulous, marvelous Shirley Calloway, mother of Anne and Liz Calloway, and Shirley was just marvelous. And then I went off to Syracuse University and transferred to the University of Michigan, and then started just hitting the boards. You know, I moved to New York City, and I got very lucky. My very first professional job in New York City was a walk-on role in the Jesse Norman and Samuel Raimi production of Bluebeard's Castle at the Metropolitan Opera. So you can't get any better than that, right?
Yes, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. And I, you know, I was acting the whole time I was in New York. I was a member of New York Theater Workshop. I was what we call a usual suspect with New York Theater Workshop back in the day, and did everything from acting to running box office to, oh my gosh, you know, house managing, you name it, going on workshops and retreats with them. And then eventually I joined the board of the Barrow Theater Group, the Barrow Group. Lee Brock and Seth Barish are the founders of that incredible theater company. And theater has always been kind of the bedrock of my experience. And all the while I was booking films here and there, but theater, my roots are all in theater, starting all the way back with the Pivens and then all the way through my time in New York City. My husband and I moved out to California in 2007. He was opening up a West Coast office for the company he was working for. And it's so funny, when I moved to California, you know, we had three children that were all entering middle school. And I think, you know, a cross-country move is a big deal. So I said to myself, well, I'm not going to act. You know, I want to stay home. I want to be a stay-at-home mom and bench warm at all their sporting events. And, you know, even though I think I was just very intimidated by Hollywood, since I had done film in New York, I just didn't know how to penetrate the Hollywood bubble. So I gave myself a hall pass to not engage at all. And that didn't last very long.
yeah.
I did start to work in Los Angeles, again, primarily in theater. I had the good fortune of being cast in a fabulous production of Stephen Sondheim's musical Assassins, where I played Sarah Jane Moore, and our production won many awards, and we kept extending and extending and extending. And I'll fast forward really to when my kids went off to college. I would take them on their college tours, really not so much for them. I wanted to know, where's my money going? I've got three kids going to college. This is going to be an expensive venture. I'd like to know what I'm buying. So we'd walk onto these college campuses and I'd see these incredible theaters. And I was very, very inspired. And I said, you know, I want to go back to school, get my master's so that I can teach at the university level. This is really fantastic. I was noticing this trend of all the content creation from individuals was all very short, soundbitey. Let me have my 15 minutes and go viral. And that wasn't an experience that I was comfortable with. I didn't want to create that kind of content for myself. I didn't want to compete in that arena. And I wanted to work with people that were serious about language and about playwriting and about story and a cultural moment where people would come together in community, go to the theater and see a play together, or go to the cinema and see a film together, go to the symphony. So when I enrolled at UCLA in 2016, I think it was, or 2015, I had auditioned. I was accepted and invited to join an 8-person cohort. And I was to get my Master of Fine Arts specifically in theater and acting. And which I did, I finished that. However, in between my second and third year of graduate studies, I realized that I had to make the film, which we now call Unbroken. And I came running back to campus after this experience that I had, and I started pounding on the documentary professor's doors, Vince Brooks in particular, and Christy Guevara Flanagan. And I said, listen, I've got to make a movie, and our first principal photography shoot's going to be in 6 months. Can you help me? And they did.
Wow.
And we did wind up shooting 6 months later. And from then on, it was a several year experience of putting together a documentary film that I had never, ever done anything like this before. I'd been on so many film sets, but I had never been behind the camera. And I certainly had never produced anything as monumental in scale as Unbroken has turned out to be. So
yes, and we'll talk about that for sure in a moment. Yeah. But what I love, man, listening to your journey, I mean, from since you were 4 years old to actually manifest to, you know, in a continuum that built upon each other. So our young people, you know, that can happen too. So if you have your dream, you can stay and live within your dream. And also on 320 South Plymouth Court is where
Plymouth Court, that's what it is.
That's where it was, and right there down near Michigan Avenue. Chicagoans back in the day may remember this very well. So, I mean, this is so rich, and it's incredible hearing you share. But we're going to take a really quick commercial break, Beth, and then we're going to come back and we're going to dive into this, oh my goodness, this magnificent body of work that you have created.
Life-changing is what drives us, all of us. At UPMC, we believe life-changing medicine can't wait, and that our breakthroughs are only as good as the people they help. Serving more than just patients and members, but whole communities, to change the future of health for everyone. Because only then can we call it life-changing medicine. UPMC.
Welcome back. And Pam McElvain, your host of The Inclusive Voice, here actually with my co-host, Beth Lane. We're just going to give it to her because she is an award-winning director, producer, and writer of the major, many, 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 many opportunities on the stage, but of her debut with Unbroken. And I had an opportunity to read some of the background of this incredible feat, which is, you know, I will tell you, Beth, emotional, just in digesting the story itself and knowing that, you know, it's not part of my legacy, but it's definitely part of our legacy. I want to just take a brief moment and just share a little bit of your background. I usually don't do this. I'll let you talk about it. But oftentimes, you know, my guests don't want to share some of the greatness that they've done. So I want to share a little bit of it, and then we're going to go into this a little bit. So, listening audience, Beth Lane is the award-winning director, producer, and writer of Unbroken, a powerful feature documentary that uncovers her family's extraordinary true story. This is her directorial debut. However, what's important to know is that she's not only premiering this incredible documentary, but it's a world premiere at the Heartland International Film Festival that happened October 23. But what I think you should know is that she's been awarded the Anthem Award for Human and Civil Rights in Documentary Film, recognizing Unbroken for its profound social impact and contribution to advancing the dialogue around moral courage, resistance, and human dignity. It's just something that, you know, it's close to all of us. But her work has been rooted in the depth of bridge building and dialogue, using her personal narrative as a catalyst for understanding. But she's hosted more than 40 episodes focused on what's happening in the social impact and what's happening here. She's on Instagram, live podcasts. A partner with Beth. We'll talk to her more about that. But it's important that we recognize she is an acclaimed, celebrated, even first-time producer, person of the arts, as you've heard. And it's important that you recognize her talent and gifts as she share. So this is clearly a project that we really want. If Netflix thinks it's meaningful enough to go forward, then we want all of you to take this opportunity, this unique opportunity, to hear from this brilliant producer and writer, award-winning director, as she is described. So thank you, Beth, for allowing us to just celebrate you a little bit in this moment for this work, this exceptional work that you're doing. So I just wanted to just put it out there so folks really understand the depth of who you are and what you're bringing.
Well, I'm very humbled by all the words that you've shared, Pam. That's very, very generous and very kind of you. Thank you.
Well, we do our homework here. So we're just talking about the facts and what's real. So let's talk a little bit about Unbroken. One of the things I will say that I appreciate clearly when you talk about resilience, moral courage, and human dignity, even though you're sharing it in the story of, you know, what happened within your family, it's something that we need so much today. But what's happening today in the world of uncertainty, even from day to day, these are things that I hope folks can connect to in hearing your story. So, you know, Unbroken is both a deep personal story and a historical one. What first compelled you, you know, to bring your family story to the screen, particularly at this time in your life?
You know, when I decided to make the film, which was in the summer of 2017, we came back from Germany, and 3 weeks later, Charlottesville happened. So when I made the decision to make the film, it was really very self-serving. It was something that I had an itch about, a curiosity about. It's a story I've known my whole life, but I knew that I didn't know anything about it. My mom had very few memories. She was so young when she went into hiding, and she was only 6 years old when she came to this country. So she didn't have much to share. Two or three memories were all I could ever get out of her, and they were always the same ones over the years. So when I made the decision to make the film, as I shared with you, I went running back to campus at UCLA and said, "Help me make this." And by the time we got around to having our world premiere at Heartland in Indianapolis, the timing of our world premiere was what we say in Yiddish, it was beshert, it was meant to be. Our world premiere took place on October 8th, 2023, just 24 hours after the most horrific atrocity against the Jewish people since the Holocaust had happened, when Hamas violated, you know, the unconscionable acts that they did in Israel, you know, upon all the Jewish people, particularly at the Nova Festival, but it goes beyond and beyond to all the different kibbutzim, where they were literally murdering and beheading and raping and pillaging human beings. And the atrocity of that made it so clear that Unbroken was absolutely on the right path and was needed more than ever. It was eerie how we felt that we hit the moment of the zeitgeist. And I'm sorry that we did, but at the same time, Unbroken is a story of hope, and it's a story that encourages empathy and compassion. And I think this is something that we really, really need right now as an antidote to hate. We can focus on all the bad faith actors around the world right now, or we can focus on strengthening our own resolves to be the kind of human beings that we want our neighbors to be.
I just want to say this. I'm just going to just say this and just pause a bit, but I just wanted to say your antidote to hate, that's powerful. Just wanted to, and people, and when folks, you know, use that, resonate that. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. And so, you know, we continue to become more relevant as each day goes by, unfortunately. The deafening silence of so many around the world globally on October 8th, October 9th, October 10th. And then, of course, we all witnessed with horror the experience of all the college encampments that were happening, that were vilifying Israel, vilifying Jewish people worldwide. It's okay to not agree with a government. It's okay to protest a government, but that doesn't mean that you are protesting a country that you're from. People seem to forget that before October 7th, Israelis themselves had been in the streets every Saturday night for well over a year protesting their current government. By the hundreds of thousands, every Saturday night, marching and marching. So there is this idea, this misinformation about who the villains are and who the bad faith actors are on a global stage that needs to be course corrected. And again, I think it always just boils down to something very, very simple. And that is, can you treat your neighbor the same way that you want to be treated yourself? Full stop. It's really that simple. And if you wouldn't want to be spoken to or harassed or vilified the way someone is, you know, if you wouldn't want that upon yourself, then why are you doing it to somebody else? I think that so much of what's happening with all of these protests are people are just parroting what they're hearing, and they're not truly understanding what's going on in the world. And what's happening in the world globally is this leaning toward authoritarianism, this leaning toward fascism, and really this vilifying the other. And particularly what's happening in our country here today with our immigration policies, it's just, I never ever thought that we'd be living through this moment. And I certainly didn't think that my tax dollars would be funding an organization that would be picking people up off the streets and sending them to undocumented, who knows where, with no paper trail for families to find their loved ones.
How does, you know, now we're going a little bit organic. I tend to do that. Sorry about that. Based on where you take me, where you guide me, and based on what you're saying, I agree with you. A lot of us, you know, are stunned, and ancestors turning over in their graves, in this moment. How does what we are experiencing today in this moment remind you of, particularly of the work that you've done, the story that you're telling, remind you of some of the journey that you retraced, you know, of your family in, you know, during those days of the Holocaust in Germany? What are some of the experiences, I guess, emotionally powerful things that are resonating with you today as it was when you were, you know, putting this work together?
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, the journey was, you're spinning so many plates all at the same time. And I knew that I wanted to make these discoveries in the moment. So of course I did some research, but I didn't do a ton before we began shooting. The research was really more about where to go and who could potentially open the door for us. I'll give you one example. In the film, when you see me go into Centrum Judaicum, where there are some archives, and I see some papers and a photograph of my family, the archivist had emailed me the package of what I was going to see before I went. And I decided not to look at the package, the email folder. I wanted to discover it in the moment. I wanted the camera to capture me discovering it because I wanted you as the viewer to discover it with me. And having those kinds of experiences, I feel like they jump off the screen and they land in your body, for example. What you're feeling is probably what I was feeling in that moment. You know, that's only one of them, but I'll fast forward even to, I think it was September of 2023, a month before our world premiere. I had arranged to have 9 Stolpersteine laid in Berlin. And Stolpersteine is the German word for stumbling block. The artist Günter Demnig has created these bronze bricks that he puts in the ground to commemorate the murdered and the persecuted. So you have to make an application to be one of the names that he will make a brick for. And we got all 9 of my family members approved, and there was a ceremony happening. So my mother and sister and I flew to Berlin for the ceremony. And there was a lot of press, and we were published in the papers that evening and the next day. And I got an email from a fan, or, you know, just somebody who happened to read the article, and he was a hobbyist archivist. And he had kind of done a deep dive on the article that was printed in the paper. And he sent me an attachment. And normally I would never open an attachment from a stranger. Right. But there's something about this one that I just trusted it. And I opened up this attachment, and he found a photograph of my family from 1945 that none of us had ever seen before.
Wow.
And
wow.
It's incredible. And it's something that I hope that we will be able to find funding for a museum exhibit, because this one photograph will launch an entire exhibit that is just the most extraordinary discovery. At least for me, it was overwhelmingly emotional and powerful to see it. It's a slice of life. It's not a posed picture. The journalist who took the picture was really acknowledging and celebrating that there were still 7 Jewish children alive in Berlin after liberation. So rare, so unusual. Most children were murdered, or at least they certainly weren't living in Berlin. And it's a slice of life photograph of them getting dressed and getting ready for the day. No one's looking at the camera. They're all living in one room together. It's staggering. And when I think about how the journey brought me to something like that, it's just amazing, just incredible. I'm so grateful.
Yeah. And this is like, they're in their 80s and 90s, right?
That's right. That's
and
right.
Sharing. So they took you back down an emotional memory. Memorial experience. So, and you talked about also just the intensity of your travel in Germany. Share with us a little bit about what that's like.
I mean, Germany traveling.
Like.
Yeah, traveling through Germany was just phenomenal. My uncle Alfons had written a 40-page document for the family of his memories. And so we took that 40-page document, and every single building, address, location, town that he mentioned in the document, we put into a Google map. And that's how I created the locations where we were going to film. So some places we went to turned up, you know, just with a plethora of treasures. And other places we went to, we really couldn't find much going on that had related specifically to our story. But I found the German people to be extremely generous, and they are a culture that really is living by their reparations. They truly understand the atrocity that they allowed to happen in their country, and they're doing everything they can to right the wrongs from the past. So we found it really quite easy to walk into museums, to walk into cultural institutions. We were greeted with open arms, and it really was a beautiful, wonderful experience meeting students in Indersdorf and you know, getting to work with the journalists in Munich, and you know, all these places are in the film. But it's something that if I could do it over again, just so I could even slow down and appreciate even more, I would. But of course, when you're filming and you're wearing 8,000 hats, you're just hoping that you've captured everything that you need and that you've transferred all your data properly so that your editor can eventually have both sound and footage.
it's incredible. Just listening, I mean, that is like so incredible. I appreciate global travel. I've had the experience to visit about 30 countries. And of course, my experience in Germany is, you know, more commercial than anything. But, you know, this to me, this is amazing. Even though you were doing it that, you know, through film, you still, you know, had a lens and a connection in what was happening, you know, what you were able to see and then recreate through the documentary. So share a little bit, you know, we're going to take a commercial break and come right back. But then I want you to share a little bit, you know, how Netflix got interested and said, oh, this is a story that needs to be told around
Absolutely.
The world.
Sure.
So folks, stay with us. We'll be right back. If your energy is assuming just like mine is, you're going to want to hear more.
Breakthroughs aren't just for medical journals. They're to help people hold their grandbabies for the first time. Expertise isn't just for awards or recognition. It can be what gives people the best chance to walk again. At the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, people are the driving force behind everything we do. So we never lose sight of what's important, and we never forget who it's for. Because in the end, we're people helping people. That means every breakthrough, every clinical study, every interaction is to help people like you, your family, and your neighbors be the best they can be. We do everything possible because we see everything possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frederick.com.
Welcome back. And Pam McElvain, your host of The Inclusive Voice. And, you know, I'm calling her my co-host because she is a celebrated celebrity here with Beth Lane. But just, you know, go back and warm up your coffee, sit in your chair, and, you know what show on Netflix you're going to want to watch this incredible premiere of Unbroken. So, you know, Beth, just listening, you know, to your story has done a few things, sent a few different emotions, you know, just through my EI, my emotional intelligence, and just imagining, you know, how you felt in doing the filming, being actually in the present and having seven relatives. I mean, I love our relatives in their 80s and 90s, the history that they embody, the, you know, the wisdom that they lived in, you know, the experiences and the ancestry that they represent. To have them there sharing and you're being able to memorialize their experiences, I say is truly a gift, you know, from God. I'm very spiritual, but I truly feel, you know, you have made it to an exceptional gifting. But here we are now, you've done all that work and you presented it and you've been out there, you told the story, and now you've got this major network that says it needs to go where everybody needs to have an opportunity to connect to your story. Share with us a little bit about that journey.
Sure. I mean, I pinch myself. Well, first of all, you're calling me a celebrity, and so you're making me blush, Pam.
Well, you are, you know, that's why this interview is so perfect, you guys, because, you know, she's done it. I'm actually the one, you know, being here. No, you really are. This is incredible.
You're so generous. You know, I think of myself as a mom of three, a wife of one, you know, it's,
those are the real jobs. Those are the real jobs.
Okay. That's right. And so trying to figure out, okay, yes, you've made the film, but now how are you going to distribute the film? And right now we are living in an age, particularly for documentary films, where it is very, very, very difficult to get a distribution deal, let alone even a sales agent. And I have to say that one of my dear, dear friends came on as a producer, and he was instrumental in helping us make the connections and meet the right people that would help us sell the film. And so, you know, I give all that credit to my sales team over at Submarine. They are a phenomenal, phenomenal sales team, and their relationship with Netflix, they really made sure that Netflix gave us a shot. And the woman who is in charge of documentary licensing at Netflix fell in love with the movie, and all it takes is one yes, I think. And who knows what she had to go through to get it approved by the whole team. I have no idea. I'm not privy to those conversations, but I'm so grateful to her for watching the film, believing in the film, and saying, yes, we need this on our platform. And they worked with me beautifully because they actually allowed me to pick the launch date. I think that's so unusual. I mean, you think of this giant like Netflix, they're going to tell you what to do. And of course they do, because they know how to do it right. Nobody does it better than Netflix. But that they allowed me to guide us to launch last year on April 23rd of 2025, because last year, Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, the date changes every year, kind of like Easter changes every year. It's based on a different calendar. So Yom HaShoah was on April 23rd a year ago. And when we launched, Pam, we hit top 10 in the U.S. and we ranked number 5.
Yeah.
It still blows my mind. Yeah. And so Yom HaShoah took place just these past 2 days ago, on the eve of the 13th and yesterday the 14th, today's the 15th. So we're still in this window of Yom HaShoah commemoration experiences. Yeah. So if you haven't gone on Netflix yet, please do watch Unbroken. Make sure you're finding Unbroken by Beth Lane, the documentary. There are so films on Netflix called Unbroken. Make sure you're finding ours, guys.
And it's there, and the image is there, and I see it, and it's in my favorites. I have to be in a certain place. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Sure.
To watch those, right? But I have it because it's a Netflix top 10, you know, and I'm a Netflixer.
Yeah. And I want to address that though, Pam. I think it's really important because I do think a lot of people have had some fear and trepidation around watching the film, because the minute you hear Holocaust with it, they start to imagine all of the horrible atrocities and the terrible footage that, of course, has to be out there and people have to know about it and see it. But I can share with you that Unbroken is an entirely different kind of Holocaust film. It is not that. We are not Holocaust History 101. We are more of the social and emotional learning film that's more Holocaust 301, if you will. And our film celebrates the Christian and Catholic upstanders along the way who enabled my Jewish family's survival. So it really is multi-faithed and celebrates the goodness of people. As I mentioned before, it's an antidote to hate. So we don't focus on the hate in the film. We focus on the actors, the friendships, the neighbors, all the people who actually did the right thing. And so it gives audience members and communities and students and houses of worship, and it gives everybody the opportunity to exercise their own muscles of empathy and compassion in the most beautiful way. So I hope that that allays some fears for anybody who is worried about watching a World War II film. This is not that kind of film. It's a very different kind of film. And it is a film. It's not a TV series. When you turn your TV on, yes, get a bowl of popcorn and turn the lights out and put your phone away and really create a good cinematic experience for yourself. Take yourself to the movie.
Well, yeah. I'm going this weekend, but I will tell you, thank you so much for that clarification. But I'll tell you, it's not the Holocaust that really frightened me. I saw with, there was another film, a major movie with, I can't think of the actor's name, that was entitled Unbroken. And it was pretty devastating. Yes. And that's kind of where I connected first before I even went. But for the most part, I'm the person that's watching. I'm going to watch Netflix in Polish. And
great. That's so wonderful. And yes,
I'm going to watch the languages because I love all. So I was going to get to it then. But that was my first connection to it. So thank you. So it had nothing even to do with the Holocaust. It really is the stories. I love all those movies. I love all those historical preferences because it shares the stories and you can learn, just like you said, from it. So thank you for that clarification. OK, folks, we're going to the movies. She said we can do some popcorn with it. Okay. And it's just another Netflix kind of cinematic theater. And kudos to Netflix, for
bravo to seeing Netflix. You. Netflix really does an incredible job of putting, stories out there for people that they just wouldn't normally get to see. And I'm very happy to share that we were published yesterday in Kveller magazine as being one of the top 12 Holocaust films that are streaming right now. So it's, here we are a year later and we're still just so incredibly relevant. We're so thrilled about it. I'm also happy to share with your Chicago audience that we do have an in-person screening at the Wayfarer Theater in Highland Park, hosted by the Illinois Holocaust Memorial Museum on Sunday, May 17th. At the Wayfarer Theater in Highland Park. If you go on the Wayfarer website or the Illinois Holocaust Memorial Museum website, you can get your tickets there. And the reason that we've chosen that date for that screening, it is the 80th anniversary of the Weber siblings emigrating from Germany to America. And we thought we needed to really mark that moment in time.
Oh, what a perfect segment into wrapping up our session. But I love that. Look at this Chicagoan. Beth Lane has actually left something, part of her legacy here. And we know the Wayfarer Theater in Highland Park. So Sunday, May 17th, I would love to go, but I know it's going to be packed. And so I'm gonna go ahead and do it at home. I'll just go ahead and do it at home on the big screen with popcorn. But that is where those of you, that can get there, go there. If not, you can do it in your own home. Beth, this has been such a joy to have you with us this morning. And to see your works continue celebrated because it's meaningful. And that's why Netflix picked you up. That's why you have been revered and uplifted, because this is meaningful and the Holocaust story needs to be told in a way that brings people into today's environment of the workplace where people are striving for inclusion and belonging and to be able to have shared history where they can identify and connect. So we appreciate you for taking this time.
I'm so grateful. And, I just want to share, please visit us on all the different social media channels. You can find us at Unbroken the Film or Beth Lane Film. And take a moment and visit our foundation is the Weber Family Arts Foundation.
And, thank you for that.
And the mission of the foundation, just put in WeberFamilyArtsFoundation.com. The mission of the foundation is to combat anti-Semitism and bigotry and hate of all kinds, specifically through the arts and specifically by sharing stories of hope. And we have developed an incredible learning guide with Journeys in Film, the same company that created the learning guide for Schindler's List, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
But this, The learning guide is free. Go to Unbroken the Film or the Weber Family Arts Foundation.com and you can get the learning guide for free. And of course, we're always looking for people to underwrite our packages to help get the get our learning materials into schools nationwide. You know, right now it's all about our impact campaign. Where can we bring the lessons? How can we help educators teach empathy and compassion? And they can teach it through film and they can teach it through the story that we're sharing of the resilience and the courage and bravery of the Weber siblings. So I hope everybody checks us out.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I saw that and I didn't go there. So thank you, the Weber Arts FamilyFoundation.org. That's very important for us right. to do. And we'll follow and up and see how we can support it too.
It's the Weber Family Arts Foundation.com.
Okay, and
I'm sure we'll put the hyperlink in the show notes so that if people want to find us, we're easy to find. Or just guys, go to unbrokenthefilm.com. All of our websites are linked to each other. You can find
that's what I was assuming. Folks would just go to Unbroken Netflix and they'd find you. But absolutely, I love the connection to community and foundation work. And we'll follow up with you to see how we at Promenade Media can even support
you
within our networks, this work that your foundation is doing. So once again, thank you so much this morning for joining us, waking up early, being in Chicago, and sharing your incredible experience and story with us all.
So grateful to be here. Thank you for the opportunity, Pam.
Absolutely. And we'll see you all next week on The Inclusive Voice, Promenade Media, WCP 20, 8:20 a.m.
Imagine being part of a network where your voice matters, your leadership is nurtured, and your growth is intentional. That's what our membership community offers. When you join us, you're not just gaining access, you're stepping into a movement. Our membership platform connects executive leaders, emerging talent, and inclusion champions who are committed to personal, professional, and organizational transformation. With your membership, you'll receive exclusive access to benchmarking insights, learning labs, virtual masterminds, curated networking, and mentoring circles. We offer tiered access from professionals looking to advance their careers to executives ready to influence at scale. You'll also get preferred rates to our national conference, regional receptions, and VIT talks. Plus, speaking and publishing opportunities to elevate your brand and thought leadership. What makes us different? We don't just celebrate leaders, we build them. This isn't a subscription. It's a strategic investment in your legacy. So whether you're here to grow, connect, or lead, your next level starts with us. Join the community. Lead forward and make equity real together.
Don't let the tight labor market get in the way of your company's success. Open your mind to new ideas and open your enterprise to new workforce solutions. With Bold Business, companies can leverage extensive global assets and a lengthy track record of success in reducing labor costs. Don't let borders get in the way of giving your company the best possible workforce. For remote positions, Bold Business can save clients up to 30 to 50% with skilled and experienced candidates from a global talent pool. Head to boldbusiness.com for more information.